Well, welcome to Dairy Livestream. I'm your host, Corey Geiger, managing editor of Hordes Dairyman. We are broadcasting from our Cheese Cave, our studio in downtown Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, at the historic W.D. Horton Sons Company building commissioned by Wisconsin Governor W.D. Horde. Our conversation today will focus on dairy product exports, firsthand accounts from farmers. I'm so pleased to have four articulate dairy farmers on Dairy Livestream to share their firsthand accounts on a recent trade mission to the MENA region, with MENA standing for Middle East and North Africa. The November 2021 U.S. Dairy Export Council Trade Envoy took this group of dairy farmers to Dubai. This city is located in the United Arab Emirates. It's in the Persian Gulf region. Dubai is considered by many to be the business capital for that part of the world. The MENA region is an important customer base for U.S. dairy farmers and processors. Our neighbors to the south, Mexico, is our largest dairy product customer. And I just want to give a little perspective on that. Then comes Southeast Asia. It's a big region with 16 countries, and the people living there have a growing appetite for dairy. That's why the U.S. Dairy Export Council started the Center for Dairy Excellence in Singapore. And of course, there's China, the world's largest dairy product buyer. These are just some of the countries to which the U.S. Dairy Export Council has held farmer-based business activities since carrying out their first farmer trade mission to Japan in 2011, over a decade ago. That event took place 16 years after the U.S. Dairy Export Council was formed in 1995. To be fair, it took a while for the U.S. dairy community to get its sea legs. In those early days, the U.S. was only exporting 1 to 2% of its milk production in the form of dairy products. These U.S. dairy export trade missions give customers in the regions around the world a chance to actually meet U.S. dairy farmers and processors who produce the milk and make the nutritious dairy products. As a person who has been on a number of these activities, it's impressive to see people's faces light up when they meet U.S. dairy farmers in person. This also holds true for the USDEC staff and the many personnel from cooperatives, processors, and trading firms that work on behalf of the collective U.S. dairy industry each and every day. After all, it's relationships that matter, and it's people who buy products from people. With that as a backdrop, let's get rolling on the conversation, dairy product exports, firsthand accounts from farmers. As a reminder to everyone, this webcast will be available on our Hordes Dairyman YouTube channel within 24 hours after the live event. Dairy Livestream is also available where you like to listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Search for Dairy Livestream from the convenience of your smartphone to download it. After you hear from our panelists, we'll move to the questions portion of our segment. Go ahead at any time and ask a question in the GoToWebinar control panel. The earlier you ask a question, the more likely we will get it answered on the air. Before we hear from our first guest, Marilyn Hershey, let's go to our first poll question. What percent of U.S. milk production was exported in 2021? And obviously, we don't have all the totals yet for this year, but we're very close. 1%, 7%, 11%, or 17%. So go ahead and answer that. We'll wait until a majority of our audience has answered it, and the votes are coming in fast and furious. Michaela, who is our producer, so we'll go ahead and share the results of that poll, which we'll have on the screen, and 73% of you got it right. We have grown from 1% roughly in 1995 to 17% in the United States this year. So we welcome Marilyn Hershey back to Dairy Livestream. She was a guest here back in July. Marilyn is a lifelong dairy farmer who is actively involved on a daily basis on her family's Our Joy Farm in Cochranville, Pennsylvania, with her husband, Dwayne. What I appreciate about Marilyn is not only her strong work ethic, but her ability to take a rather large topic and break it down into smaller portions for the rest of us so we can join the conversation and help create wins for dairy. Marilyn, as a dairy farmer and chair of Dairy Management Inc., share with us how the U.S. Dairy Export Council fits into the larger umbrella of dairy promotion organizations.
Thank you, Corey. And it's great to be here and be on this very effective podcast once again. But, you know, US DEC was started by DMI, still under the DMI umbrella, is something that we look at with a lot of intention and a lot of focus. We understand the importance overall. And, you know, these missions trips started with farmers really to bring awareness on both ends. So bring awareness to the farmers who are on the trip that they can understand more deeply how it is that the US DEC relationship, how the importance of exports will help us as dairy farmers. It also, on the country that we're visiting, it helps them understand how much we value the US DEC effort. And I think it's, you know, a couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to visit Japan and Hong Kong, see what's happening in Southeast Asia. And a lot of times we talk about exports, and rightly so, that's where our eyes go, because it is a strong focus for US DEC because of the market there. Had an opportunity on that trip to talk to a culinary school, see what's going on there, to look at the whey protein efforts that we were doing with a very strong health and wellness program in Japan, and then Hong Kong, visiting with restaurants. I mean, you think about Hong Kong and the opportunity for chefs to use U.S. cheeses. It's just so important for us to focus on those countries, because the opportunity is just huge. Also had a trip to Mexico recently, and that was the most recent trip before Dubai. And, you know, obviously, Corey, you started out talking about what we, you know, what we export to Mexico. And so that is a very important focus for us. And that relationship was what we focused on that trip. Strengthening the relationship that we have with Mexico, strengthening the communications that we have back and forth, so that we can just improve and get our quality products into exports. You know, this trip in Dubai, we focused in the MENA area because it is a newer area for us, and we wanted to get to know the employees that we have on the ground over there. We wanted to make sure that they know who, you know, they know the farmers and the products that they're represented. And it was just an important trip for us to be able to seal those relationships with them, but also to be able to see the work that they are doing on our behalf. And I think it's eye-opening. Every trip that we go on, it is eye-opening for many reasons. But mostly to see the work that they are doing on behalf of U.S. farmers to get the quality products out there.
Well, and Marilyn, you absolutely say that, and I probably need to say the most obvious statement. All these employees that are working in the collective dairy community overseas, we're working right through the pandemic. I mean, they're battling the supply chain issues, trying to get products to customers there. And you talked about your trade missions trips to Southeast Asia and Mexico, and the most recent one here to the Middle East and North Africa. Could you talk a little bit about the great work going on? And one of the focuses right now has been the USA Cheese Retail Promotions Initiative. Talk a little bit about that.
So when we look at retail, you know, retail around here is one thing. You know, we have a lot of retail to focus on, but when we look at retail internationally, we don't always have that strength in that market. So in the MENA area, we have focused on, especially in Lulu. So Lulu is a retail in Dubai. It has over 200 stores in the MENA area. It was just recently started in 2000. I consider that a relatively new retail, but since we started with them, we have tripled the SKUs that are in the grocery stores. We look at social media campaigns, we look at in-house campaigns, and there's been over 9,000 different campaigns and marketing marketing campaigns to get the U.S. cheese and U.S. dairy products front and center. And I am going to show you, if you can see, I don't know if this shows up real well, but this is a seal and it says cheese made from the USA. That is a seal that you will find in retail on the US cheese products. So I think it's really important to know when people are walking through the supermarkets that they see that this product is coming from the US. And it's a U.S. DEC effort through the Cheese Guild that has been going on for a couple years, and I would say it's very successful. It's one, you know, people want to know where their cheese is coming from. I think other countries and other areas of the world, they do a good job with that, and we really had to step it up and showcase U.S. cheeses to make sure that people know that the quality product they're getting is coming from the United States.
And from what I saw too, is that people hold U.S. dairy products in high regard. And so doing that branding that Marilyn held up there is very important for customer recognition. So that's, Marilyn talked a little bit about some work doing to help with immediate sales. As we go along, we'll have some of that. And we'll talk about some long-term efforts that are going on too, collectively with U.S. Dairy Export Council. Before we invite Larry Hancock on to the program, we're going to go to another poll question here. And that poll question is going to read, who can be members of the U.S. Dairy Export Council? Dairy processors, dairy cooperatives, dairy traders, dairy farmers, or all the above? Just pick one. And as you're answering that question, I also want to remind people that you can go ahead and ask questions into the question portion of the GoToWebinar control panel. So you can go ahead and do that at any time. And so we'll go ahead and close that poll off here and look at the results. And we'll have Larry actually talk about that. Wow, our audience is very well informed here. You guys get an A+ here on that one. All of the above, and maybe I made that question too easy, but you guys are in the audience are smart folks, so you probably knew the answer there. It's my pleasure to invite Larry Hancock to Dairy Livestream. Larry is one of the most genuine people I've ever met. Larry and his family started dairying in Muleshoe, Texas in 1978 with one heifer that calved in the truck. He, along with his son James and daughter Layla, now milk 4,000 cows in three barns and farm 5,000 acres in Muleshoe, Texas. In 2020, Larry was elected chairman of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. He also serves on the National Dairy Promotion and Research Board. Larry, these trade missions are rather unique experiences. You've been both to Mexico and the Middle East here right during the pandemic. Could you start by talking about the U.S. Dairy Export Council and your role as chairman?
Yeah, can you hear me now? I'm unmuted. Okay. Yeah, I'd like to. I'm always excited to talk about dairy. First thing I want to say today is I'm really kind of glad to see milk price up a little bit. It's very helpful. And the reason I bring that up is because so much of our production is exported nowadays. It's really important that we continue to drive exports. U.S. DEC is an organization that's supported, funded by DMI, Dairy Promotion Dollars, and also by its members. And the members are, like you saw in that poll, can be a lot of different businesses, but they all deal with exporting dairy products. U.S. DEC does more than promote products overseas, like the mission trip we went on. They also do a lot of work with market access and regulatory affairs, their MARA, which is part of their business. And they put together great assets to help the members be able to understand what the country needs to import or to export into that country. They help with the licensing and with the labeling and with the certifications. And that's really a big part, really a big plus for aiding in export of dairy. They also promote U.S. dairy across the world, and in different markets, and they do a lot of research and seeing what countries we should, I mean, look at where the next area is to export. And so they do a lot of work, and it's really good the things they do to help the farmer here by exporting more products. As role as chairman, I get to work with the staff, and we have a really wonderful staff. Our CEO is just terrific. Krista Harding does a really good job, and she leads the staff in direction. We also have a board, and the board, which I'm the chairman of, we oversee the direction. We let the staff do all the work, which is really a good part. And we just are there to make sure that the dollars are spent wisely. Okay.
Thank you, Larry. And, you know, maybe later on, Andy will comment on that. We're probably talking a lot about the promotion and sales side. But I remember on the trip there, Nina and her team were talking about issues and rules and regulations of getting product into Egypt and things going on with the government. That is probably as important or maybe even more important than the promotion side of it. And so that's a big deal. And this actually leads into my next thing that I wanted to talk to you about, Larry. We both know it takes a team to develop dairy exports. During the trade mission in Dubai, we learned that team even includes officials at the U.S. consulate. And later in the trip, the team working on behalf of U.S. dairy expanded to a gathering that included U.S. consulate staff, importers, distributors, and processors. Share the importance of all these folks working together.
Okay, I'd be glad to. One thing as I was preparing for this, I did prepare a little bit. As I was preparing for this, I looked over some of the schedule that we went on. And those are two of the things that really stuck out for me. The very first day we got to go to the consulate, and we met with the staff there. We met with Valerie Brown, who was a dynamic person, and she's an agriculture counselor. And I mean, she was so energetic. It was really great to hear her speak to us about that area and about agriculture imports into that area. And then we met with Lucas Blustein, who was the agriculture attaché. And he was a good guy, went to school in Texas, so he and I kind of hit it off. He had some boots on, which I really liked too. But anyway, it was really good to talk to him. I think there were a couple of things that it really brought out. First, it let them know that we were there. We were farmers and staff from USDEC, and we were there. And I thought that was really important that they knew that we were there. We cared enough to take off the time and the effort to travel all the way over there and show them that we really cared about exporting into to that area, into the North Africa area, Middle East, North Africa. Also, it showed that we were committed to exporting and that we supported the USDEC staff that were in country. And the other thing that I thought was really important, they gave a really good talk about agriculture exports into the area and a lot of information about dairy exports into the area. And I thought that was great because it gave them an opportunity to study and learn a little more than they normally would about dairy, so they could present this program to us. So I did meeting with them, did a couple of great things, but then also later in our trip, like the next to the last day, we had a trade dinner and they were part of that. And in that, they also talked to everyone that was invited. There were about 100 different people that came, importers, exporters, farmers. In fact, the table I sat at, there were a couple of local farmers, which was really interesting to talk to. But they were there and they got to give a talk about how they support the area. And then all of us farmers got to give a short 4 or 5 minute talk and show pictures of our farms. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was about everywhere we went, I was asked about quality. I wasn't asked about quality. I was told about the quality of the U.S. dairy products that they get and how good the quality was. And then I was always asked about sustainability. And it was really fun to talk to them because they wanted to know sustainability clear down to the farm level. And then there was always a question about supply. And not so much they were worried, because we showed them that we were committed to supplying them the wonderful products, but they were concerned about the delays that I talked to. So it was really a great trip. We were really busy. Those were two of my favorite things that we got to do.
Thanks, Larry. And when you bring up names like Valerie Brown and Lucas there, they are dynamic, energetic people, and they almost make me look like a sloth, and that is hard to do. They were working hard on behalf not only U.S. dairy farmers, but all of American agriculture. So as a reminder to our guests, as you hear our panelists here, go ahead and type in questions into the GoToWebinar control panel. And one of the audience questions that came in is going to get answered in this poll question. So get ready here as the poll question comes up. Rank the world's top dairy exporters. So you only get to pick one of them. What's the right ones in order? Is the EU first? Is New Zealand first? Is the US? So figure that out. Then who's second? New Zealand, EU, or US, and then who's third? So we'll give people a little bit of time to study that one. And that will speak to who's the competition out there. Those are the top three exporting countries / regions in the world. And obviously the European Union is a conclave of 27 countries. So we're getting people to take that. We're just gonna give them a little bit here, Michaela, because that one's a whopper here, but I think it's really important for people to understand here. But so let's go ahead. We're just past the 50% mark here. The world's leading dairy exporter is the little island nation of New Zealand. It's not much bigger than Wisconsin and Illinois put together geographically, but they have 6 million dairy cows. In second place is the European Union. Now that's putting all those 27 countries together. Does not include Great Britain because they're not part of the EU anymore. And then third is US, and US is hard charging in there. So that's the answer to that question. And next we're gonna invite Becky Lesvo to Dairy Livestream. Becky is a passionate promoter of US dairy products. Becky and her husband Ralph and son Ken own and operate 180 cow dairy near Ryo, Wisconsin. It's in the south central part of the state. And Becky is a member of Dairy Management Inc. Board of Directors, and she's not only a hardworking dairy farm woman, she is an ultrasound and nuclear medicine technician at Meritor Hospital. So she works full-time there and works on the farm, and there's a lot of people in the dairy industry that have that kind of work ethic, and I just wanted to point that out. But during the recent trade mission, Marilyn, Larry, Alex, and you, Becky, had a rather unique experience on a pair of webcasts on social media. So tell us a little bit more about that interaction and what people were asking you on those webcasts. Welcome to Dairy Livestream, Becky.
Well, thank you, Corey. And thank you for inviting us today to be able to share the Dubai experience. I'm glad we have that opportunity. So the segment I'm going to talk about today is the U.S. dairy farmers in the kitchen. And let me just give you a little bit of background. In 2020, through USDEC, through the USA Cheese Guild, started a global communications program. And with this, we're trying to further tell the USA cheese story to international customers and to consumers. And currently, we're on 22 social media accounts in 10 different markets. And most of you are very familiar with these platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, very, very popular platforms that people are accessing and using today. And I'm sure all of us are aware that online marketing is just an integral component to any marketing plan, no matter what you're trying to sell anywhere in the world. And by being involved in this, we can tell our story further to a larger audience. And we all know that social media has just grown. It's just taken off. And especially through a pandemic, it is really, it's really been utilized more so than ever. I just want to give you a couple of facts that I found was really interesting. 80% of the Arab nationals between 18 and 24 years old get their news from social media. And the internet users in this region, average 8.4 social media accounts. And when you look at the UAE, They have 10.5 accounts. This is the highest number of social media accounts per person globally. And I think that's something that really speaks to why this is important that we look at this type of approach when we're promoting the USA word. I did do a little bit of asking because, of course, a lot of the people that I work with in the hospital and in different events and that, ask them how many accounts that they're usually on. And that kind of the number that I was given was 3 to 4 accounts. So when you look at 10.5 accounts, that's pretty significant audience that we would be able to reach through them. Through these posts and stories, we can really share about cheese and dairy experiences, and we can connect with key opinion leaders. And these are the people that we really want to help tell our story. We want to be able to tell what we do, how we do it, and the pride that we really show in the dairy industry that we have and the products that we have. We also want to be able to showcase innovative new products and just really tell our story. So we went to the Top Chef cooking studio in Dubai, and most of you probably know, or some of you know, that I really love to cook, and you can probably tell by our family here, and I like to experiment and really get out there in the kitchen. So what we did was we had a 3-hour taping, and a professional film crew was present in a studio, a dedicated cooking studio, which made it even more fun for me. They did video and they did photo shoots of us. We actually had 2 recognized food influencers. And this, I think, is important. We tagged with people that are really out there in the industry that are promoting and having people following them. Our first of the team of 2, we had Nicole Mofton. She's a TV presenter, she's a food blogger, and to me, the most important part, she's a dietitian. So she really knows the health benefits that we have with dairy products. Her following alone is 28,000 followers, 28,000, that's pretty impressive. And she's very, very adept on US cheese and dairy because she's worked with the organization in the past. Then we had a chef that we worked with, and this was, I just love this part of it. Nikita Gandhi Patni. She was MasterChef India Season 4 winner. She's a TV host, she's an active cooking blogger. Now this person has 59,000 followers. And to me, you take the combined effort of these two, look at the potential audience that we're gonna meet and be able to share our story. So before they started the taping, Larry and I had a chance to share our photographs and talk about our experiences, just give them a little bit of a background kind of what our farms are and what we do. And then they started the taping. So they took 2 of us, Larry and I went first. And what they did was they were preparing a dish. I know we're right before dinner, but I'll tell you what it was. It was prepared roasted pepper cheese queso dip. We are in a kitchen. Somebody is cooking this amazing dip. It has garlic.
Talk about food on Dairy Livestream without showing us samples, but carry on, Becky.
I wanted to, but I didn't have time this morning. But it included garlic, peppers, butter, cream cheese, cheddar, and pepper jack cheese. 4 dairy products. So this is what they're doing, is they're showcasing the versatility. And in what I found very interesting is people are really hungry for recipes and new trends and what they can do with products. And so here we are trying to talk about our dairy experiences and our farms and all that, and somebody is making this delicious dish. So when she finished, it could either be a dip or she made a nachos grande. And this will be sent out so people then can follow it and try the recipe. Marilyn and Alex, they did a cheese tray, a charcuterie tray. They assembled one and then they also were sampling. And in their segment, they were talking about the versatility of the cheeses that we have, how we can add things to them, whether veggies or flavors or rubs or whatever, just to give another semblance of different cheese types that people might want to incorporate in their cheese trays or their charcuterie trays. With this, the whole time both of us were in our, both groups of us were in our sessions, we were able to talk about dairy and about our farms. And I think this is rather this is very, very important. This is key to that whole experience that afternoon, is that we could really tell for ourselves the story, because so many times I think things get lost on social media and you hear others and people get shared. This was a real story from the real people that do it. And it doesn't matter if you're in Texas or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania or Missouri or Washington, California, we're all in industry. We might do things a little bit differently, but the end product is we really strive to have the most safe, abundant product that we can provide to the consumer, and products that they want to try and be a part of their diet. They were asking us questions and we talked about how we feed our cows. I was able to explain a little bit about the farm program, the farmers assuring responsible management, and how the greatest majority of our milk is through that program. We talked about the first animal livestock animal care program, FARM. It's recognized in the International Organization for Standards in the world. So, I mean, I think that's very important that they hear that we really adhere to rigorous standards, that we want to provide a quality, wholesome product. We talked about over 1,000 varieties of cheese that we have in our country, and that really surprised them that there is that much, that many different products that can be utilized. We also talked about USDA and FDA regulations and how we have standards that provide quality for our product. You know, it was just, we always had to reference what major city we were close to, obviously, so that people knew what part of the country we all come from. But, you know, the questions that were even coming in from people watching this episode was really interesting. One of the questions was, what is your favorite cheese, that Larry and I were asked. I eat a lot of cheese. I love cheese. I couldn't just go with one.
Ricky chimed in with all the above. And so what was also really important in this, and if you hear the excitement in Becky's voice, is Dubai is a very trend-setting area. So a lot of creative things happen in that region. And that was one of the other important things about interacting with these folks. And so that was the social media part of it, talking about food. And we're going to talk about another part of food here real shortly. And some of the questions that Becky was getting asked relates to this next poll question too. What country is the world's single largest producer of cow's milk? Now, we're talking cow's milk. Is it the European Union? Is it India, New Zealand, or the United States? So go ahead and take that poll or answer that poll question. And we're going to invite Alex Peterson to join us next. And he is from Missouri. So we're getting some strong results here. We'll wait about 5 more seconds. And this is going to be the leading answer behind the scenes here is actually not going to be correct, and we'll explain to you why in a second. So let's go ahead and see those poll results. People picked India first, and when you add water buffalo milk, it is indeed the country that produces the most milk on the planet. However, a lot of that milk, especially, it does never hits a pasteurizer. It's not commercial grade. It's a lot different situation in that country. So when we're talking cow's milk from dairy cows, the U.S. is the unquestioned leader, and that total number is a 101 million metric tons in 2020. That's a big number. It's my pleasure to invite Alex Peterson to Dairy Livestream. Alex is a rising star in the dairy community. He's chair of the National Dairy Research and Promotion Board, which is part of Dairy Management, Inc., and he is a dairy farmer from Trenton, Missouri. Peterson Dairy has been in operation for more than 50 years and truly a family business. Alex farms with his parents, Brian and Barb, and his brother, Opie, on the farm each and every day. Alex, during the activity pack trade mission, I mean, you're there 5 days. All these things we're talking about were boom, 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 just kept happening. You went to one of the world's top culinary schools, and that's rated by the French, not those in the United Arab Emirates, not in United States. The French made those ratings. And what makes cuisine in this part of the world so interesting? What makes it so interesting? Why is it important to spend time and resources to train chefs in both in this region and the United States? Because this is an overarching theme of dairy promotion. And when it comes to the specific trade mission, I understand the experience even included a graduation ceremony at that school. So Alex, tell us some about that.
Well, I don't know how much we need to be trusting the French all of a sudden, Corey, but I will take their word that it seemed like a really good culinary school. So I think it really kind of brings into focus what we were doing there. And I'll start by a question that I asked one of our hosts. I said, so what is authentic Emirati cuisine like? And they laughed at me because there's really very, very few actual people from the UAE. It's a cross section of the world, and it's a melding pot of the world. So that's what makes a culinary school such an incredible opportunity there, because they're able to take flavors and tastes and preferences from all over the world and kind of blend them together and create a tremendous high quality, authentic, you know, whether it's Indian food or Pakistani food or Saudi, all these regions, but also blend them together. And that's what this culinary school is really doing so well, is adding in, you know, for our part, USA cheese into these wonderful kind of heritages that come from all parts of the Middle East, North Africa, and making them better. Because, I mean, what doesn't good, high-quality cheese make better? But this culinary school, it goes to the point of what we do here in the U.S. as far as marketing and promotion. The same holds true over there. So when you talk about consumers, you know, people buy products from people. You know, Becky talking about social media and getting people interested in our products that way. Marilyn talking about catching people's eye in the grocery store and marketing that way. Or even Larry, as we work with exporters and people who are buying our product from overseas, you know, whether it's big bulk commodity or whether it's, you know, specialized higher value products, you have to make that connection. And food service is another huge leg that we have here in the US, and it's a leg that we're really trying to take advantage of overseas. And who decides what goes into food service? And that's chefs. And so as we partner with this International Center for Culinary Arts, and like you said, just a fantastic institution. I mean, I pale in comparison in the kitchen to Becky, I know, but even I kind of wanted to get into it with such a nice facility. But when you take these up and coming chefs, and to your point, Corey, about Dubai being really kind of a trend setting part of the world, we're talking about a city that has 12,000 restaurants, 600 hotels. I mean, this is people from all over the world, not just the Middle East, but all over the world. And you get to touch such a huge region by influencing the people there. And all these hotels and all these restaurants send their up and coming chefs and stars to culinary schools like the one we worked with in Dubai. And whenever we're able to put them through a very intensive USA Cheese Guild training program, and not only help educate them on how, you know, what cheese is, where it comes from, and the basic questions, but also enlighten them to the quality of USA cheese, the reliability, and the variety of cheese, and not just you know, your Pepper Jacks and Kojaks and, you know, these commodity cheeses, but also like very very high end artisan cheeses. And as you know, Becky said, we have over 1,000 varieties of cheese. There's a lot of different things for really high level chefs to pull from and utilize to make what they do every day better. And that USA cheese on the menu gives them that credibility that really steps up the menu and the traffic in their restaurants. We were also able to be there for the tail end of the expert level class and got to see a graduation and try, most importantly, we got to see and try their final projects, these cheese boards and desserts and pastries that they made with USA Cheese, and just phenomenal. I mean, you talk about something that's just excruciating to talk about ahead of lunchtime, just incredible amount of expertise. But we're talking, and help me out, Becky, was there like 15 or 20 different countries represented in the class that we were talking to, people from all over, and they're going to get trained in Dubai, and they're going to work, and some of them will eventually go back or go to other places And so it's anytime you can impact somebody, they take that with them wherever they go. And one of the coolest parts of it, and Larry kind of talked about the whole part of the mission was, you know, it's oversight is part of what we're doing. And we want to make a difference. We want to add to what's going on there. And so as we were on the celebrity part of this celebrity oversight mission, we sat down with this class of 22 students and for over an hour just answered their questions about our farms, about dairy in general, about environmental standards, practices, you name it. And they asked incredibly good questions. These, you could tell, you could see why they're such good chefs by how intellectually intelligent they were, how their mind worked and how they could put things together, but ask terrific questions. And for, you know, over an hour, we just, and just kind of like today's podcast or live stream, Corey, there's plenty of wisdom with Larry, Marilyn, and Becky that I was able to just kind of sit back and let them do their thing. But these three, I mean, just are tremendous, tremendous ambassadors for USA Dairy. And it didn't matter whether they were talking to somebody high up at the consulate or talking with a 20-year-old chef student at a culinary institute. They sincerely cared. They sincerely believed in what they do, how they do, and the product that we produce, and how important it is to get into people's hands, not just here domestically, but around the world. And it was just a great experience, and the smiles on their faces as we got to give them their diplomas and their little starter kit. You know, a cheese knife and an apron and a box of other fun stuff, where they get to be a USA cheese specialist and take that back with them to whatever kitchen and restaurant they're working in and wherever they go the rest of their career. But the same is true here in the States. We work hard, you know, as promotion, as industry, to influence people who are making decisions on what goes on people's plates, whether it's in a home, in a restaurant, in a hotel, or you name it. And the same is true anywhere in the world. And that's why these, what we do is so important and how we do it is so important. And it was just a great event to be a part of.
Thank you, Alex. And you're right, the questions they asked were incredible. And we're talking a lot about cheese and food right now. Certainly another thing, the Gulf Food Expo was going on at that time as well while we were there. And the ingredients that go into bakery and other foods are also important, and skim milk powders and those kind of things were all part of this trade mission as well. We're focusing in on some of the actually restaurant grade stuff here. We're going to have one more poll question. Marilyn showed you the logo, and Alex talked more about the certified USA cheese specialists. How many of those USA cheese specialists have been trained already? Select one of those. 46, 246, 446, or 646. And as you're answering that question, reminder to our audience, you've got questions, go ahead and put those into the GoToWebinar control panel. There's a question section there. We got some questions rolling in. And so go ahead and cast your ballot there. A number of ballots are coming in, but I'll give a little bit of a hint, Michaela. You probably need to aim high, right? Yes, aim high. So we'll give everybody about 5 more seconds. And we're going to bring Marilyn back for one quick question here. So let's go ahead and see the answer to that poll. Actually, there's been a lot of work been done here. And Angelique and her team at USDEC has been part of that. Angelique Hollister, the answer is 646. And that's the number I had as of December. I may be even out of date there. Marilyn, I want to ask you one more question. As part of that trade mission, we had a Meet the Media event that was important in sharing the great message about U.S. dairy products. And this was more of the trade press. And I got to spend some time with a guy named Samour Bathier, who was a Dubai-based editor for the ITP Media Group for 24 years. And talk real shortly about that activity, and then we'll turn it over to Anthony.
Yeah, thank you, Corey. You know, we had a morning with 4 to 5 really high quality media that was in the MENA area. And it ranged from Arabian business. There was an Arabian television media represented. There was a hotel and catering news that was there. Pro Chef was also represented, as was Middle East leading publication, which is BBC Good Food Middle East. And, you know, I mention those just to show you the high quality media that was represented. Each person representing that publication was an editor in chief or a top producer. So they sent high quality people, and we had an opportunity to talk to them. There was a very diverse and beautiful cheese spread that was there that they could see how the quality U.S. cheeses that are being used in the MENA area. But the real gem of that time was allowing us as farmers to kind of just mingle with each one of them. And we were asked a lot of questions. And basically, it was just a Q&A time with us. And surprisingly to us, the really top subject that we talked about was sustainability. Every single publication was talking about sustainability and asking us about our sustainability goals. We had a chance to talk about what we're doing as a U.S. dairy industry with our sustainability goals and our carbon goals. We were able to talk, as Becky mentioned, about FARM. So it really was a good wrap to the week, where we got a lot of good information out into that area, both about us as dairy farmers and about the products that we send over there.
Thank you, Marilyn. And Andy, welcome back to Dairy Livestream. Happy New Year. Andy, to say the least, this is a lot of market activity. And to be candid, it's just a small snapshot of what goes on each and every day around the world. You've studied dairy exports for many years. Please share your insight as to where we've been and where we're headed on the dairy export front.
Yeah, thank you, Corey. First thing I think I feel like saying is this has been a great panel. And looking at the time, I think you ought to give some real serious thought to inviting these folks back and just let the questions flow from the audience, because I'm sure there's a whole bunch of them that we're not going to be able to get to today. I would like to take some time, though, to kind of paint some of the background of this picture. We're getting some great insights into some of the current activity now. The poll questions are sharing kind of some of the data that describe what's going on. But I think it's really useful to fully appreciate the journey that the U.S. dairy industry has been on that led to this point, which perhaps is one of the advantages of being as old as I am, because I got some sense of this from personal experience. After World War II, there was a big global effort that basically was predicated on the notion is we got to figure out a way to talk to each other globally. We got to figure out a way to bring cultures together, to bring people together, to bring social institutions together, and also to bring economies together, to get away from a lot of the protectionism that was in the first half of the 20th century and kind of open the world up a little bit. This led to a series of conversations among countries that today we talk about as the WTO. Back then it was called the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade. And one of the toughest things to talk about was agriculture and food, because every country, every human being is concerned about food security. They get a little bit tense about having to rely on somebody else for something so basic and important as food. And honestly, the US dairy industry was probably at the top of the list of protectionism, for a variety of reasons. That's why we only had 1-2% exports. We only had a couple of percentage of imports as far as that goes too. And this was tied to the old price support program and so on. But basically the only thing we brought in were kind of fancy exotic European cheeses that we didn't make. And the only stuff that we sold was really very commodity kind of stuff, like non-fat dry milk. And the God's honest truth is most of that stuff was USDA subsidized food donations. So the point of this story is we didn't know diddly about exporting or trade. We didn't have companies that had that experience. It wasn't on our radar screen. We didn't care. As some of you who are old enough to remember, the price support program evaporated during the 1980s, came to a pretty brutal conclusion. And at that time, we were also in the middle of a new round of discussions that came to be known the Uruguay round, because Uruguay was the country where they had the first meeting. This was a long process of about 10 years. And there was a huge goal to say, okay, folks, globally, we need to start dealing with agriculture and food. And the dairy industry went into that conversation kind of kicking and screaming, but understanding that the time had come that we needed to just get in with the global program. The price support program was dead, and we were going to have to start to think about trade. When that happened in the early 1990s, we really didn't know if we were going to become a net exporter or a net importer. We could think of good reasons why we could be an exporter, but it wasn't that obvious. We had no experience. We could also think of good reasons why Europe and other countries, New Zealand, could just flood our market with all kinds of stuff before we knew it. Well, of course, the story, as it turned out, resulted in us becoming a very serious exporter. And I think, frankly, we're kind of the country to beat when it comes to world trade. I don't care if we're one, two, or three, or actually two, if you want to think about a country. But we define a lot of the tone of trade in world markets today, and I think we'll do so more. But when we first opened the door, we actually increased imports faster than we increased exports. Well, why is that? Well, as was pointed out, USDEC came together at the same time we signed the agreement. That's because this was a long process. The industry see it coming. The industry knew it needed to get organized. And this was one way to bring people together and help them understand more about world markets. At the end of the day, it's companies that make trades. It's companies that buy stuff, and it's companies that sell stuff. But when you've got companies that really don't have much experience in global markets, you know, it's different than selling to Kroger or Pizza Hut. Having an institution like USDEC that can bring people together, can do kind of the pre-competitive, you know, nobody's going to try to help Leprino get the thing over Schreiber. This is about pre-competitive, understanding markets, building relationships, understanding all the amazing and ridiculous technical rules and standards. That's was the beginning of helping our industry learn how to get involved in trade. The other thing that I think I would really want to stress, and Corey used the word in his opening, is, you know, if you want to go out and buy a box of nails, okay, you know, you go buy a box of nails, you're probably looking for a good deal. You don't agonize over which box of nails is better than some other box of nails, or whether this company is a better nail maker than somebody else. You just go get a box of nails. We're not selling nails, we're selling food. We're selling a product that has a lot of texture, a lot of characteristics. People have expectations about what that's going to do. And part of that now in the 21st century is relationships, a word that Corey used. And that's what these four people were doing when they were traveling around this part of the world or anywhere else, is building a relationship. Okay, I can taste your product. I can see whether or not I like the way it works in my mouth, but what are you as a person? What are you as an industry? What are you as a company? You know, the image that a lot of the world has about the U.S. dairy industry is this factory farming, we don't care, ka-chunk-ka-chunk-ka industry. And when you see four people ranging in size, you know, bigger and smaller, and you find out, oh, these are like really nice people, and they're like normal people, and I like them, and he kind of reminds me of my grandpa. Now you're building relationships that are really important in giving people a reason to look at your product, not just the product itself. I mean, of course, the product has to be good, but it's this relationship aspect that I think is really key. And I think that's what an organization like USDEC and all of the elements around it really help us do and help us move forward. Also, I want to stress a lot of this isn't just us talking, telling our story, but using the two ears that go with our one mouth to listen. Because, you know, it turns out a lot of people in Dubai probably aren't looking for mozzarella whips. They're looking for something that fits in with their cuisine, their culture, their expectations. And I want to say too, you know, for those of you who aren't really that familiar with this part of the world, the Middle East and Northern Africa is the birthplace of the global dairy industry going back some 8,000 to 10,000 years. The dairy culture in this part of the world is very strong. It's also quite different. A lot of it's small ruminants. A lot of it is fresh products, including fresh cheeses, because they don't have a lot of storage capability. Now we're seeing a lot of wealth in that area. Dubai is a great example of that. So you've got people that can afford exotic or higher margin foods, but also a lot of middle class and even lower income people. There's a huge market out there for a variety of U.S. dairy products, but we have to realize that what sells in Minneapolis or Atlanta isn't necessarily what's going to sell in Tripoli or Dubai. So that's what I think is really cool about these exchanges, is we both get to talk and we both get to listen. I want to make a quick shout out to USDA. The Foreign Agricultural Service is the employer of the agricultural attachés that sit in these US consulates. The Foreign Ag Service is not a distribution agency. They don't make sales, but they are a conduit. They are a facilitator. They are the ones that help organize meetings. And they sit in the US consulates in partnership with the State Department. And I think that's a wonderful part of USDA that a lot of people kind of are oblivious to. But it's an excellent facilitator for these sorts of trade missions and connecting people in our country with a foreign country. So do we have opportunities to go beyond what we see here? Absolutely. And I think a key element of this is building those relationships, developing a palette of products that satisfies consumer interest and needs, and helping them kind of explore American cuisine and appreciate some of the things that we do here that may be a little different from what they do. So my hat's off to all of these folks, and I can't be anything but extremely optimistic about how we go forward in that part of the U.S. dairy industry.
Thank you, Andy. And when you talk about being the birthplace of the world's dairy industry, a few brave souls on this webcast did have some camel's milk. That's another source of milk in that region. And one of those, you talked about small ruminants. So yes, they've been making cheese there far longer than anywhere on the planet. And we're going to go through some questions real quick. We're going to extend this to the five after the top of the hour here, just to get through the questions. And I never said this on the air. This is we've had a lot of great guests on Dairy Livestream. This is the best group of panelists together, and the synergy that we've had. Thank you to all five of you. Andy, we're going to do a couple rapid fire questions here, and I'm going to interpret this one for the audience member. The audience member asks, do you have the federal milk marketing order breakout for exports from each area? The federal orders really don't track that, but overall, there's certain regions of the United States that export more than others. For example, the West Coast does a lot of powders and that. But why don't you briefly talk about that for this audience member?
Well, my friends at USDA probably aren't going to like me saying this, but the data on exports by state is a guess. It's not their best example of really precise statistical estimates. So I think you got to take that with a grain of salt. But obviously, virtually ignoring Canada and Mexico, our exports go from over on boats. And they either are going across the Atlantic towards Africa, or they're going across the Pacific towards Asia. And of course, most of that's the Pacific. What that means is there is kind of a natural advantage to having product that's located a little bit closer to that port. So we expect to see more exports coming out of Washington, Oregon to some degree, and of course California is gigantic. But you know, there's nothing that says the East Coast can't participate in exports, especially a little bit of an advantage maybe going east, or someplace in the middle like Missouri and Wisconsin obviously participate as well. I will say, it might cost more to get that cheese from Wisconsin to Los Angeles than it does to get it from Los Angeles to Beijing, oddly enough, because truck transport is pretty expensive compared to floating a boat on the water. But all places have an opportunity, but there are advantages if you're located close to those ports.
Another quick question, I'm going to send this to you, Andy, unless another one of the farmers can chime in on this, but what percent of U.S. exports is cheese? Maybe I would like to rephrase that question and say, what percent of our cheese do we export? I think I have a number, but...
Yeah, well, the other guys might know better than me, but I think cheese has been running in the single digits, maybe 5% and growing. A huge part of our exports have been powders, milk and whey, but we're working really hard to increase the cheese side, and good on us for doing so.
Yep. We're the world's largest single country producer of cheese, the United States is. You said 5%. My memory was 6%. Anyone have a different number there from the team on the live stream?
I don't have an actual number, okay. But just to say that this is a focus for us at DMI. We have an international partnership committee focusing on cheese, especially with our partnerships that we have with them in Japan. And so it is a focus that we have, understanding that we have opportunities to market cheese in very unique ways and areas. And like Andy mentioned, you have to look at each country and how they want to use cheese, and how is it that they want to receive their cheese. So it is a focus we have. I'm sorry, I don't have a number. Maybe we can get one back to you, Corey.
Alex, anything to add there?
Well, I think, and that's a focus the USDEC and DMI have both, is not just volume out the door for exports, but value. And that's not just exclusive to cheese, but the whole array of products that we're exporting, finding ways to extract more value for those products.
Larry, a couple of the audience members were curious. You sat at that table that one evening and actually got to talk to some dairy farmers in the region. What were one or two quick takeaways that you had from that interaction?
They were amazed that I milked that many cows, I think, for one thing. But there was a little bit of a language difficulty, but they were interested in the fact that we could produce the quality of milk that we did. And we talked a little bit about sustainability, but I'm not sure we understood each other real well. That's what we were talking about. Sometimes I'm not sure I understand why I talk to my neighbor when we talk about sustainability, what we're talking about. But it was really interesting. And they were just, the thing that really struck me was they were just normal people, just like my neighbors here. I mean, they milk cows and, they're kind of like me. They like cows, I think, and it was good. So,
Becky, real quickly, what was your perception of the value that U.S. dairy brings to customers? I mean, you talked to a lot of people there. What were some of the key things that you heard from people buying U.S. dairy products?
You know, the thing that I heard the most was they were impressed with the quality and the variety, and just the different uses that we have for our products, that we have a lot to offer. And to be able to, as Alex said earlier, people are, one thing that I found interesting is people travel here for cuisine, and when they like the variety, they like to see what people have to offer and do the different tastes. And to me, that's really important, because we do as an industry have a lot of choices, and we're able to deliver that. And to have another concern sometimes that people had was, are we going to be a consistent market? To keep providing that product that they decide to choose to utilize. So a lot of real positives. People liked our product. They liked the packaging. They liked the taste, the versatility. Just a really good representation, I think.
Thank you, Becky. And we're going to close the questions here at this point. I may take Andy up on his idea and bring this group together again for another dairy live stream. Our conversation will continue here on February 23rd, 2022. It'll be 11 a.m. Next month here. We'll have our next dairy live stream. And actually, Andy, Mark, and Chris and I are getting together this Friday, and we're going to do some ideation on our future topics here. So we'll have that topic shared out with our audience via email very shortly. And again, tomorrow, this webcast will be on our YouTube channel, our podcast channels, the very next day. And I look forward to seeing you on February 23rd. On behalf of Marilyn Hershey, Larry Hancock, Becky Lesro, Alex Peterson, and Andy Novakovic, I'm Corey Geiger, your host. Thank you for joining us today. I wish you all a good day. But goodbye, everyone.